listening to KBOO Portland.
Listen to Black Book Talk at KBOO FM every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon. Co-hosts O.B. Hill, Patricia Welch, and Emma Jackson Ford discuss African-American authors and books. That's Black Book Talk every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon on KBOO FM.
Welcome to our special segment of Black History Month of Holla for Labor. My name is Tina Turner Morfitt. I'm the president of the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists chapter in Oregon. My honored guest today is President Reverend Terrence Melvin of the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists International. Reverend Melvin is also the secretary treasurer of the New York State AFL-CIO. Welcome to our show, President Melvin.
Hey, thank you for having me, Tina.
So before we get started with our conversation, I'd like to give you an opportunity to address the passing of Reverend Jesse Jackson.
Yeah, Tina, thank you so much. I woke up this morning to the distressing news that this great icon went to be with our ancestors. And when you think about Jesse Jackson and the work that he had done, has done throughout the decades for civil rights, for workers' rights, for civil rights in this country. Him running for president on two different occasions lifted us up and gave us the feeling and the right that we had the right to be a part of this country, right? To be able to vote and register people and vote. And it was that groundwork that he laid that finally allowed for 2008 for Barack Obama to be the president of these United States and serve for two terms. So I applaud his work that he did over the years. He will be remembered in the history books of this country, even though there's some people trying to tear down our history in this country. He will be remembered by those of us who will carry on the work that he had started doing, that he'd done throughout his whole life. We have all got to stay in this fight because of Reverend Jesse Jackson. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Those are truly words of wisdom. So let's go ahead and get started with our conversation.
All right.
So currently, we are celebrating the 100 years of Black labor making a difference in organized labor. The road ahead for the next 2 years are going to be difficult ones. What message do you have to inspire Black workers and workers of color that it's worth the fight?
Well, I think when you look at where we're at right now in this country and the leadership of this country, it is the man in the White House, and I don't want to mention his name because it forces me to use language that I should not use in public.
Thank you.
But the person that's in the White House has basically went after Black workers. He's went after what he calls DEI, and to him that means VLACK. So okay. We are all under attack. When you look at the number of people that he has went after, even the targets that he had in the federal governments and the agencies that he sent DOGE after were agencies that were predominantly, had predominantly Black workers.
Mm-hmm.
Goes after these companies and he tells them, leads them in saying, get rid of your DEI. He's saying, get rid of Black workers.
Mm-hmm.
So what does this mean to us as Black workers as this season? Look, we can't wait for somebody to come and save us. We've got to save ourselves. We've got to come together like never before and we've got to work together like never before, and we've got to get allies like never before to come and to understand that the plight of Black workers are the plight of all workers. This country was built on the back of Black workers. From everything, the houses in this country, even the house that the man in the White House, that White House was built by slaves, built by Black folks, right? Mm-hmm. He's tearing down part of it, but I bet you there's some of us that's going to be building it up, back up. Mm-hmm. So what do we have to do? We have to come together, like I said. We have to work together, and we have to come up with a long-range plan. We have to hold these politicians accountable and let them know that we're going to get out there, and we're going to register, and we're going to vote. And for those that are with us, we're going to help them. And those that are against us, we're going to do everything we can to get them out of power. This is our time to stand up like never before. And that's what we have to do as a people.
Okay. So Black women are often viewed as being angry when they display their passion. How do you balance your relationship working with Black women in leadership in organized labor?
Well, look, we have been blessed throughout the years to have some really strong leaders, Black women leaders in organized labor. I think back to Addie Wyatt, when she was active in her union, the Amalgamated Meat Cutters Union, and she rose to be the first Black vice president of her union, a stature that we didn't see. But she was strong. And she was out there and she laid it out. I think of Lillian Roberts, who was came out of retirement, had been working for years in AFSCME as a union in Chicago, and then went to New York City in DC 37. She retired, and they brought her back out of retirement to run that organization for, I think it was another 12 or 13 years, right? She was in her 80s when she finally retired. Right. Strong Black women. I look at what we have going on right now. We have Becky Pringle, who's heading up for the second term. She's ending her second term as the president of the National Education Association. And now she's moving on to some international work in the union movement dealing with education. I look at April Verrett, who is the president of SEIU. Strong Black young woman that's out there kicking butt and taking names in the name of workers and Black workers in general. I look at the new president of the USW Steelworkers. The Steelworkers, believe it or not, has just elected a Black woman, first Black president, and she happens to be a woman to lead the United Steelworkers Union. I mean, this is phenomenal in what we have in the Black women that we have that's out there kicking butt, right, in this movement. And they ain't asking nobody for nothing. They're going out there and take their place, and they're moving their place. And you know what? Call you an angry Black woman if they want to. Don't worry about that. As long as you're getting the job done, keep on doing what you're doing.
Well, sweet. So here in Oregon, when we celebrate Black History Month, we host four separate events for one each week. Our most recent panel we had was entitled A New Generation of Black Voices. A major concern expressed by the young activists evolved around gatekeeping. How would you prepare a smooth transition of passing the torch between generations to sidestep these concerns?
Well, I think one of the things, and you know this, Tina, we've been working with at CBTU as my tenure as president the last 14 years, is to try to bring many young people into the leadership roles. Not on the side. Yeah, they got their under 40 group that they do their things with, but we have been very conscious about bringing them into leadership roles. Just last 4 years ago, we brought in Sharika Carter from the Washington State Fed, who's the Secretary Treasurer, to be one of our secretaries at CBTU. We brought more young people on the board, the national board of CBTU themselves. We are encouraging our chapters and our regions to bring more young folks into leadership roles. Because look, every movement that's been done in this country and around the world has been led by young folks. It ain't been led by old folks. It's been led by young folks. Even when CBTU started, right? They started with a bunch of young black folks that were just mad as hell and wanted to do something different and wanted their voices to be heard. Bill Lucy was in his mid-30s. I mean, these were young folks at the time when we created, and that's what we have to do. We have to move out of the way and quit telling them, your future is coming. You are our future. No, they are our now. They are now, and we got to start listening to them, right? And we ain't going to always agree with them, but we have to give them our wisdom and sometimes let them run with it. But that's what it's all about. It's about knocking down these barriers. Some of us get in these positions and we think we're supposed to die in them, literally. And that's not what the movement is all about. In order to keep the movement fresh, you've got to have fresh ideas.
Sure. So you mentioned Brother Lucy. You had a very close relationship with him. How do you think he would feel knowing now that we, you know, if he knew that we had black women who have now been elevated to the levels of president of these international unions?
Look, I know for a fact that Bill was very proud in his later years of the work that he did within our movement to open doors for black and brown people and women in this movement as a whole. It was Bill who orchestrated back in 2005, I believe it was, the big move at the AFL-CIO, it was or 95 or 2005, with the big move to add women and minorities to the national AFL-CIO board of directors. It was Bill Lucy who pushed unions to help elevate black people within the different unions, not just his own union, but the different unions. And, you know, before he passed, we had six international black presidents of unions and many more secretary treasurers in the number two spots of unions across the country. He was very proud of that work. And I think he's looking down and smiling at not only black folks, but black women taking leadership roles. Look, we know y'all been running stuff for years, okay? Y'all just let us sit in seats. Y'all just dusted and moved us out the seats and just went and took the top seats and went about to do your business. But I'm cool with it. As long as the work is getting done. It ain't about title, but it's about the work getting done. And these ladies, these women, these black women are leading good work.
Well, great. So you mentioned two women. You had also indicated that there are a total of, I think, eight black labor leaders of major unions. Who are the
There's
other?
There's seven right now.
Okay. So who are
There's
the other?
Seven right now.
Who are the other five?
The three new ones. Let me start with the new ones and then go back. Okay. The three new ones is Milton Jones at UFCW. Jonathan Smith at APWU, and as I mentioned, Roxanne Brown at Steele, who she actually gets sworn in on the 1st of March this year.
Okay.
And then the dean of them is Lee Saunders of AFSCME. And then we have Becky Pringle that I mentioned at NEA. We have April Barrett at SEIU and Everett Kelly at AFGE.
Sweet. Sounds like a real powerful team.
Yes. Yes. Very, very powerful. And if you look at the number of members that they represent, they represent well over half of the membership in the national AFL-CIO.
Wow. I don't think many people know that.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot. So in July of 2015, I'm going to use the Wayback Machine. Okay. In July of 2015, CBTU presented a white paper entitled A Future for Workers, A Contribution from Black Labor. Within this document, there is an analysis regarding the growth in our communities of the underclass. Underclass is described as workers being adrift with no common cause with the labor movement. How should we address this? And do you think that it still exists?
It still exists, and it has existed for quite some time. And it is very much like the issue with the young folks. And that's many of those that fall into that category are young workers. They don't feel, there's two things. Many of them don't have, as some of us did in our days, when we went to a job, we stayed at the job. That was our job. We were loyal to the company or whatever it was. We were loyal till we stayed there until we retired. These young folks have a different thing. If it ain't working for me, I'm going somewhere else because it's about them and what's going to fulfill them, right? And we've got to figure out how to meet them where they are. And I believe a lot of that is getting more young people that do understand the movement building and what it takes, and have them go out and talk to the young folks. I believe it is sheep that beget sheep, right? The old folks can't go out and get the young folks. Young folks got to go out and get the young folks. Young folks got to be able to explain this movement to the young folks. And we've got to be, as I said earlier, we've got to be willing to change. I mean, doing things the way we used to do them ain't necessarily the way we're going to be doing them tomorrow, right? I mean, these young folks got a way of communicating instantaneously when it would take us months to get the word out, right? And we've got to figure out how to let them use that to help us get to where we want to go.
Okay, given that we're talking about young folks, how do you prepare them? Because sometimes they're not familiar with what our history is and how we got where we are. So how do you go about laying that groundwork?
Well, we got to tell a story, right? And wherever we are, we have to be able to tell the story of labor and how we got to where we are. We have to make the connection between, hey, didn't nobody give us a 5-day work week? We worked for that. I was just talking, ironically, in Sunday school yesterday. We were talking about the creation story and God worked for 6 days and then told you to rest on the seventh day. I said, God had you working for 6 days. It was the union movement that brought it down to 5 days for you. So, I mean, people don't understand that. People don't understand that the safety laws came into effect for all workers, not because the management just thought it was a great thing to do, but the union fought for them. The union fought for your holidays. The union fought for your 40-hour work week. The union fought for you to get overtime. And we have to ingrain that and teach that to people. You know, the Bible tells us that we ought to train up our young folks. Right, we ought to tell the story. We ought to tell our history. And part of the problem is so many of us don't tell our story. So many of us don't tell our history. Look, the government took civics out of the classroom. Why did they do that? Because they don't want people to understand what their civic responsibility and duty is in this country. They want them to be lackadaisical. So if they don't talk about it, and you see somebody you like or don't like, that's who you might go with. Or you don't care about it. So the only people that get the civic education is the people that's teaching it in their homes, the teaching it in their schools, that's teaching it, and that's the private schools, not the public schools, because they already ripped that out of them. So we've got to figure out how to educate them, how to get that education in. And I think that's a key thing. I think civics ought to be put back in every school so that everybody in this country understands that they have a right as citizens of this country and the obligation to be a part of how this country runs.
So earlier you named off the black leaders of major unions. What kind of difference do you think that they'll bring in being in those positions?
Well, you know what? I think that we've already had changes where the movement addresses more issues that affect the black community and are more welcoming to black members than they were before. Look, I have a theory, and I think I'm right about it. There was about a 20-year, 30-year period in the labor movement where we weren't doing much growth. The workforce was growing in the country, but the union movement was losing our density. And I truly believe that we had a lot of studies being done showing that the easiest people to organize was black and brown folks, particularly black women. So you can easily, or if you go out there and give them a union card, they're gonna sign up for it. You can get a union, right? But who was leading the movement at that time? Pale, stale males, right? So I believe some of them looked at it and said, well, I'm in control right now, but if I bring in too many folks that don't look like me or think like me, they might vote me out of office. So they allowed the movement to start shrinking
Gotcha.
rather than taking a chance on other folks coming in to move it forward in a positive way. Mm-hmm. And I think we got a lot of that stuff going on in our society today.
Right.
But we've got to own what we can and have it move the way we want it to move.
Okay. All right. So, can you give me some idea what your opinion is of how Black labor is addressing this national chaos?
Well, when you look at who's heading up the union that got the bullseye on them right now, which is Everett Kelly heading AFGE, he is leading it straight forward. He is unapologetically Black, and lets folks know that, and speaks up for his membership, and what they're going through. And I think that the call is out for Black leadership. We've had a meeting already. It was in December, looking at what we're going to be doing going forward in this year as Black labor leaders, right? And what positions do we want to put forth? And we've made it perfectly clear to all the halls of labor that we're going to be in the room. We want to make sure that when it comes to the work that we're going to be doing, the political work, the civic engagement work, that we get the resources we need within our community to get the message out within the community, to get the education out within the community, and to get the votes out within our community. Because when you give people the right education and information, they will vote in their best interests. And that's what we need to do. We need to stop going after people who we know that they're not going to vote our way and try to convince them to come our way, and stay with the base. Black folks, the base. Brown folks, the base. You know, Asian folks, the base. Stick with them and give them that. So we're coming together, and we're going to move that agenda throughout the movement. Lee Saunders has headed up the political program, political committee of the AFL-CIO for the last 14 years. Mm-hmm. And he has been very open at the committee meetings that we're going to see something different this year. We're going to invest in the communities where we need to invest so that we can see the change that we need to see in this coming year.
Okay. All right. So you've talked a little bit about the hope. How do you convince Black workers that there is going to, that a brighter day is ahead of them, and how could they contribute?
Well, I think we just got to be, as I said earlier, we just got to be open and honest with them. We've got to be able to show the difference between, which is something that we did not do. We've got to show the difference between 45 and Biden in 47. Mm-hmm. And make that comparison, right, about what happened when this person was in the White House the first time and how he started to go after us. And then Biden came in and tried to put some stuff back in place that we did not talk about, but he was trying to fix, right? And then when he came back in the White House as 47, he came in with a bulldozer. And I mean literally and figuratively. He bulldozed part of the White House down. He bulldozed part of the federal government down. Now he's talking about to go vote. They want you to have something to show that you're a citizen of the country to go vote. Now, who ever heard of taking your passport to go vote? And how many people don't have passports? Now, who this is gonna hurt? Because you could bring a passport or a birth certificate. Who this gonna hurt? Every woman that done got married that don't have a passport.
Right.
Now, he done laid off a bunch of the federal employees, so it ain't like you can rush and start getting passports now. They backed up. So they ain't gonna be able to get passports. So you got them, and you got the elderly people who ain't gonna even get no passport. So you're gonna disenfranchise the elderly, you're gonna disenfranchise women that got married that don't have the same name that as their birth certificate, you're going to disenfranchise all these folks. And then, watch this, there's folks that can't afford a passport.
Right.
What
right.
about them? What do we do with them, the women that can't afford a passport? You just can't vote because that's a poll tax. We got away from that years ago. And now they're trying to put it back in again. Why? So that they can hold power. So what do? We got to educate our folks about what's really happening and what's undercutting this whole thing. It all goes back to numbers. And what are the numbers? The numbers are that this country is soon going to be a majority-minority country. They see it as well as we see it. They don't want to lose power. How do they not lose power? Take away the vote from the black and brown folks. Keep the vote with the white folks. They stay in power. It's just as simple. And we've got to educate our young folks so that they can see the same thing and act accordingly.
Right. I would agree. Do you have any a final message for Black workers for in acknowledgement of Black History Month?
Well, I think, you know, when we look at Black History Month, we have to look at Black History Year,
mm-hmm.
because every day we should be talking about Black history. If I want to leave your hearers with anything, it is that we must uplift our history 365 days a year. We mm-hmm. ought not let our history that we have in this country be dwindled down to the shortest month out of the year. We ought to celebrate our history every day. We ought to educate people about our history, because right now in this country, this president is trying to take away and erase the history of mm-hmm. black people in this country.
Mm-hmm.
If it was not for black folks in this country, we will not be where we are now.
Mm-hmm.
And we have yet to receive reparations for what we went through and what our ancestors went through to build this country off of their backs for free.
Mm-hmm.
We have yet to receive that. So we have to celebrate. And if they're going to take the books out of the classrooms, we better have our own books, and we better share them with our own children. And we better make sure that they understand that they come from kings and queens.
Sure.
They come from royalty, and they ought to always hold their head high wherever they go and be proud to be black and be proud to be American and be proud to be citizens. But with that, there is a responsibility that comes with it. And they ought to be proud to go out there and vote every time they have an opportunity.
Sure. So given your statements, I know you have a CBTU convention coming up. And the theme of the convention appears to be Cherish Our Legacy and Bend to No One. Can you expand on that?
We are absolutely going to look back on where we came from, how we got to where we are as an organization. But we are saying loud and proud to anybody that is listening that we are not going to bend our knee. We are not going to bow down to anybody in this country. We have every right as any person walking on this earth and in this country to be a part of this country, to have a say in how this country runs, and no one is going to back us up. No one is going to deter us from being the leaders that we need to be for today and for tomorrow. We will not bend. We will not bow. We are going to continue to do the work that we need to do. We're going to continue to uplift blacks in labor and the black community as a whole.
Wonderful. Well, President Melvin, I want to thank you for your inspirational message during this 100-year celebration of Black labor's continued contribution to organized labor.
Thank you for having me, Tina. It's always a pleasure to spend time with you.
This is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
Coming Monday, March 16th at 11 p.m., Gremlin Time presents a suspense double feature.
You're alone and unarmed in the green hell of a Caribbean jungle. You're being trailed by a mad hunter who believes that you, a human being, are the most dangerous game.
Paul Frees and Hans Connery star in this adaptation of The Most Dangerous Game. Also, The Mask of Demetrios, starring Sidney Greenstreet and Peter Lorre.
Let's put down a date. Istanbul, Turkey, 1938.
Monday, March 16th, 11 p.m., Gremlin Time.
Support for KABU comes from its members and the nonprofit Oregon Potters Association, presenting its annual event, the Ceramic Showcase, with the Gathering of the Guilds, April 24th through 26th at the Oregon Convention Center. More info is available at ceramicshowcase.com.
You're tuned to KBOO Portland, community radio for the Northwest.
It's now time.